Good afternoon. You are tuned to Juno Afternoon here for Wednesday, the 18th of November of the year 2015. Jeff Barry here for the show today. We'll get an update from the Jeffrey Cloud Eagle Crest. Lindsay Havoc will be here with details about volunteering for the Orca Adaptive Ski and Snowboard Program. We'll talk with Darren Snyder about 4-H activities. And Eric Boris from TrailMix will be here to highlight Saturday's Sooner in Auction. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more today on Juno Afternoon. Well, the forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with scattered snow showers, low temperatures around 24 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, more snow with the snow accumulation of 3 to 5 inches expected, high temperatures around 30 degrees. Friday, rain with high temperatures around 38 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. House passed a bill Tuesday which exempts businesses on tribal lands from the jurisdiction of the National Labor Relations Board. As KGOU's Brian Hardzinski reports, supporters say the measure clears up statutory confusion and preserves tribal sovereignty.
Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell voted in favor of the bill and said the debate is clearly spelled out in the U.S. Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 says Congress has the power to regulate commerce with foreign nations, among the states, and with Native American tribes.
As a representative from Oklahoma, whose 5th district has more than 13% Native American, our largest minority, our constituents know that the actions of the rulemakers will take away the rights of sovereign tribes.
Oklahoma Congressman Tom Cole says the Tribal Labor Sovereignty Act restores authority granted to tribes 80 years ago under the National Labor Relations Act, but taken away in 2004.
Practically every county and city in this country has a golf course. Most states have a lottery. The National Park Service operates hotels. All of these activities are not regulated under the NLRA. It should be the same with tribes.
Oklahoma's 3 other representatives also voted for the measure. I'm Brian Hardzinski in Norman, Oklahoma.
The White House is not supporting the bill. In a statement, it says the president is committed to tribal sovereignty, but wants to see legislation calling on tribes to adopt standards for workers equivalent to the National Labor Relations Act. 2 U.S. Arizona lawmakers disagree on a bill which would limit presidential authority on national monuments. The Antiquities Act gives the President of the United States power to declare national monuments. The bill, sponsored by Republican Arizona Congressman Paul Gosar, wants to limit that authority, which has been in place for more than 100 years. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, tribes are involved in trying to get a monument designation in the state.
Congressman Gosar's primary goal is to prevent a national monument designation on land near Grand Canyon National Park. The bill would require approval from local officials before a monument could be created. The bill goes further to prohibit monument declarations in Coconino, Mojave, and Yavapai counties. Gosar says his bill will protect private property and water rights and local economies that he feels are harmed by the creation of national monuments. But Arizona Democratic Congressman Raul Grijalva and leaders from area tribes have urged President Obama to declare nearly 2 million acres outside the national park the Grand Canyon Heritage National Monument. They want to protect water resources from uranium mining and other activities near the park, as well as tribal sacred sites. Gosar's bill will have to be approved by the Natural Resources Committee before possible consideration by the full House. And then, of course, the president himself would have to sign it. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
Alaska Native elders say it's time to stop talking about climate change and get to work. Alaska Native villages are on the front line of climate change, with several coastal communities facing the threat of being wiped off the map by severe storms because they no longer have the protection that ice used to provide. Larry Merkilioff with the Native Science Commission told the group Common Ground that there's no time to waste. During a recent meeting in Anchorage, he added that elders say to solve problems, people will need to change the way they think. To explain, he quoted Albert Einstein.
Einstein said, "You can't solve the problems that face humanity with the same consciousness that created the problems in the first place." He said that the ideas for my inventions or my insights into creation didn't come from logic. It came from somewhere else.
Topics discussed at the meeting included imposing a carbon tax to slow demand for fossil fuels and seeking alternative energy development. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Indigenous Governance Programs at the University of Arizona, educating practitioners and policymakers to implement nation-building at home and create stronger Native nations. Course offerings at igp.arizona.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to listener-supported KTUO and KRNN FM on a Juneau afternoon. I'm Jeff Brown. I'm your host for today. Our first guest is Jeffrey Clow, who's been taking care of Eagle Crest for 23 years.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show this afternoon, Jeff. And aren't you just loving all this snow?
It's amazing.
It is amazing. And I've been walking around with a big smile on my face for a couple of days, and I know I'm not the only one, and it's really awesome to see the snow on the ground and snow up at Eagle Crest and snow in the forecast.
People look up at the sky and wonder if Eagle Crest is going to open early.
Oh, yep. Well, we're working hard up there. Right now, our scheduled opening day is Saturday, December 5th. So traditionally, we always have our staff trained and hired and ready to go Thanksgiving weekend should Mother Nature cooperate with us. And we're kind of watching it out and seeing if Mother Nature is going to cooperate with us. So we're kind of going to wait and see what happens, and hopefully she keeps giving us more snow.
Before we went on the air, we talked about comparing this with last year.
It doesn't even feel like last year, Jeff. There's way more snow on the ground at sea level and even at the base lodge up at the mountain and even at the top. We have right now, last night's reporting was 13 inches of snow depth at the base lodge and approximately 48 to 50 inches at the top of the mountain. So it is not even like last season, so we're not even going to talk about last season. We're looking forward to this coming season.
Anything coming up in special?
Oh, yes. There's lots coming up. So in addition to all of this snow that's coming down on around us, we do have the Hillary Lynn Scholarship Program out there right now. So this was a scholarship program for grades kindergarten through 12th grade. Four season passes are given away each year by the Eagle Crest Board of Directors. And it's in honor of Hillary Lynn's 1992 silver medal at the Olympics. And she was also world downhill champion and a local favorite on the slopes of Eagle Crest. So if you're interested in putting an application in, you can find those applications at skijuneau.com or check with your teacher in your school. Those applications are, again, online now and are due Thursday, December 3rd, and then we'll announce the winners on December 11th. So that's a pretty exciting way, especially with all this snow. So if you want to be up at Eagle Crest, put your application in and get a chance to win a season pass from the Eagle Crest Board.
What kind of things can people do to prepare themselves for the coming snow?
Well, I think getting their gear ready to go. Our repair shop is now open Thursday through Monday, so make sure that your gear, your bindings are tested and adjusted properly, that your gear is waxed, the edges are good, and is just kind of ready to go. I think another thing is to make sure that you get out there and get in shape. Either do a fitness class or get to the gym, do some walking, do some running, hiking. I know we've seen the last couple of days lots of people hiking up the mountain and then skiing down, and I think that is also their fitness regime to get in shape for the upcoming season.
Sounds like a lot of fun. It's planned up ahead.
It is, yep. Uh-huh. And one other thing I wanted to mention that we had coming up, Jeff, is November 28th, Saturday, we have the first ever downtown rail jam. We're going to bring a terrain park feature from Eagle Crest down to Marine Park. And it starts at 4:30, and it's going to be a great way to kick off the season. And you can find more information on that at skijuneau.com. And with all this snow, we're still looking for employees. So if you're interested in a winter job, make sure you go to skijuneau.com, visit our employment page, and get your application in, because we need you.
What are the hours going to be like when you open?
When we open, we'll be open 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the early season, and our operating days are Thursday through Monday and closed on Tuesday and Wednesday. As the days get longer, once we get past the 21st of December, we'll start chasing daylight, and we'll move our lift hours to 3:30 and then 4 o'clock.
All right, Jeff McLeod, thank you so much for coming down.
Thanks for having us, Jeff, and you can visit us at skijuno.com for all things Eagle Crest.
Yes, it's a good day for singing a song, and it's a good day for moving along. Yes, it's a good day. How could anything be wrong? Yes, it's a good day from morning till night. Yes, it's a good day.
To the station by Brenna Whitaker. Reminder that due to the heavy snow accumulation, the CBJ Docks and Harbors Department is asking all boat owners to check their vessels' mooring lines, bilges, pumps, and tarps. To ensure the safe condition of your vessels, please remove excess snow often. Listening to a Juno Afternoon, I'm Jeff Brown. Next in the studio is Lindsay Helbig. Thank you for coming by, Lindsay. So you're here to talk about the ORCA program.
I'm here from Southeast Alaska Independent Living to talk about the ORCA Adaptive Ski and Snowboard Program. Our program's coming up here with all the snow flying. We start in about a month, beginning of January, but between now and then, we usually are interested in finding volunteers for the upcoming season.
Can you talk about ORCA and the program for a little bit, please?
Yeah, so ORCA stands for Outdoor Recreation and Community Access, and it's a program through SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, and we offer recreation pursuits and outdoor activities for people and seniors with disabilities.
How many people do you serve each year?
So in our ski program, we serve about 50 skiers each year, but overall it's several hundred in our recreation program.
What kind of things do volunteers do?
So the ski and snowboard volunteers, what they do is assist participants on the mountain. It can be anything from getting people out the door, getting boots on, to just kind of practicing on how to get an on-off lift, beginner skills, to kind of helping them with safety and behavior on the mountain and just being a part of the community up there.
Do you have to be a hotshot skier?
Definitely not. No, we have a big faction of our skiers down in the beginner area, so even if you have basic ski and snowboard skills, you can definitely still be of assistance.
And you get help from Eagle Crest in this matter, don't you?
Definitely, yes. We have a huge, great partnership with Eagle Crest, very collaborative. And this year, actually, Eagle Crest is taking on adaptive lessons, and the ORCA ski and snowboard volunteers are active ski buddies. So they take a lesson with Eagle Crest, and then they can come and kind of get a free ski experience with ORCA, but is still supported and assisted if they need assistance getting on and off the lift, physical behavior, safety, that sort of thing.
What kind of time commitment are we looking for?
So it's a wide range of time commitment for volunteers. We do it every weekend from January through the end of the season in April, and volunteers kind of can sign up for as little or as much time commitment as they're comfortable and interested with. So some come a few times during the season, and then we have other volunteers that come every single weekend and are there ready to help out and make great relationships with the participants over the time of their volunteer.
Let's say somebody's on the fence and is not sure whether they want to volunteer or not. It's a lot of work, it's a lot of time commitment, but there's a lot of great rewards.
Exactly, yeah. So besides just being able to share your passion with somebody on the mountain, which for me is like the biggest perk, there's also, through our collaborative effort with Eagle Crest, a volunteer with ORCA can get a complimentary ski pass for every day and a half that they volunteer with the ORCA Adaptive Program.
Cool.
So they could use that on their own time, give it to a friend, sign up for a lesson to improve their own skills as well.
And you're having a volunteer meeting.
That's right. So to get involved with the ORCA program as a volunteer, we're having a volunteer information night coming up this Friday, November 20th, from 5 to 6:30 at COPA, down by the downtown Federal Building. And that's just an opportunity for people to drop by, find out more information, fill out a volunteer form, and find out about our upcoming trainings coming up the second weekend in December.
How involved is the training for the volunteers?
So it's a full-day training up at Eagle Crest on the snow, and we require volunteers to just come to one of 2 days of training that we offer in December, and then we also offer an opportunity in January in case people are out of town for the holidays or whatever. They have an additional chance to get involved.
And the volunteer meeting is this Friday.
That's right. It's this Friday from 5 to 6:30 at COPA. And if for some reason you're still interested and can't make that time, definitely contact us and we can get you lined up.
So this is for skis and snowboard as well.
Exactly, yeah. Ski, snowboard, and then we also offer a Nordic program. So that's cross-country skiing. If anyone's involved or has skills of cross-country skiing or just wants to help people out or learn kind of how you might be able to assist people in that way, definitely hook into this program. It's pretty fun to get people out on the snow.
Lindsay Alvick, thank you very much for coming by the station.
Thanks, and for more information, you can go to sailink.org.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 18th of November, 2015. It's the birthday of Mickey Mouse as we know him today, his 87th birthday. He had been around before in Disney cartoons, but he was a very different sort of character. He drank and he smoked and he, in many ways, was sort of like an outlaw. But in the cartoon Steamboat Willie, which came out in 1928 on this day, he was a sympathetic character. As Walt Disney said, he was a tiny bit of a mouse that had something of the wistfulness of Charlie Chaplin, a little fellow trying to do the best he could. And Steamboat Willie had something that was new at the time. It had a soundtrack that was perfectly synchronized to follow the animation. It's the birthday of W.S. Gilbert, Sir W.S. Gilbert of Gilbert and Sullivan fame, born in London, 1836. He was the librettist, and Sir Arthur Sullivan was the composer. They wrote 14 comic operas. Though they didn't always get along that well, Gilbert liked to poke fun at the upper classes. Sullivan longed to be accepted by them. But they collaborated on HMS Pinafore, The Pirates of Penzance, The Mikado, and many others. And it's the birthday of the novelist Margaret Atwood, born in Ottawa, 1939. Her father was a scientist. He studied insects in the woods of Quebec, and so the Atwood family spent half of each year there. When she was 8 years old, she went to a full year of school for the first time, and it was a very hard adjustment from the freedom of the woods She said, I was now faced with real life in the form of other little girls, their prudery and snobbery, their Byzantine social life based on whispering and vicious gossip. She decided she wanted to be a writer. She was 25 years old when she wrote her first novel. It was rejected, so was her second, but she's written 14 novels since then, including The Handmaid's Tale. And most recently, The Heart Goes Last, came out this year, originally written as an online serial. Here's a poem for today by Raymond Carver, What the Doctor Said. He said, it doesn't look good. He said it looks bad, in fact, real bad. He said, I counted 32 of them on one lung before I quit counting them. I said, I'm glad. I wouldn't want to know about any more being there than that. He said, are you a religious man? Do you kneel down in forest groves and let yourself ask for help when you come to a waterfall, mist blowing against your face and arms? Do you stop and ask for understanding at those moments? I said, not yet, but I intend to start today. He said, I'm real sorry. He said, I wish I had some other kind of news to give you. I said, amen. And he said something else I didn't catch, and not knowing what else to do and not wanting him to have to repeat it and me to have to fully digest it, I just looked at him for a minute and he looked back. It was then I jumped up and shook hands with this man who'd just given me something no one else on earth had ever given me. I may have even thanked him, habit being so strong. What the Doctor Said, a poem by Raymond Carver from All of Us, collected poems published by Vintage and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse, back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Staples, with technology products, copy and print shipping, and other solutions for businesses of any size. Learn more at Staples and Staples.com. Staples, make more happen. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
That's Jeff Bartley from his CD, Uncle Wiggily's Bicycle Ride. It goes out to Chris Myrtle out there. He used to do a show as Uncle Wiggily. In the studio with me now is Darren Snyder here to talk about 4-H opportunities here in town.
Yeah. Hi, Jeff.
So people who don't know, what is 4-H?
Well, 4-H is a youth serving program which is active throughout the United States and actually the world. But here in Juneau and Alaska, we serve youth and both genders and ages generally within the school years, so 5 years old through 18 years old. And it's a volunteer-driven organization, so similar to scouting and other organizations, we rely on volunteer adults from the community to serve to help kids learn about different skills or just help organize clubs and to participate from the community. We have lots of different topics that we offer, and it's really a it's a really broad program, and though it has agricultural roots, and a lot of people remember 4-H or know of 4-H because it began like around the state fairs and growing big vegetables and cows, sows, and everything else. But now it's broadened to include, you know, all the science, technology, the STEM related programming, and we have a major focus on Alaskan outdoor skills and just trying to meet the community where the interests are.
How many people do you have enrolled in the program?
That's a good question. It kind of varies seasonally. One of our biggest programs is just getting kicked off here is the cross-country skiing, where we've had somewhere around 80 participants at that many in the past, and it's now that one specifically is has blossomed into having a older youth doing what they call the Devo or development program, and this Nordic ski team where there's about 20 to 25 youth who spend a lot more time than our traditional 4-H programs, and they're going to be essentially training to you know really up their game, and they've been doing great over the last couple of years with that, and that's primarily a high school age activity, but there are also younger kids who are committed to that, you know, three or four times a week getting together and working on their cross-country skiing. But we have the larger group of cross-country skiers, which is kind of our Sunday group, and it's more recreational. And both of these, we're getting registrations going, and that recreational group is just Sunday afternoons, and the activities start in January, but the registration will start coming up here in December.
Is there a fee involved?
Yes. To register for 4-H, it's just $10 for the entire year, and that covers your membership and the insurance and such that helps the program. There can be activity fees on top of, depending on the activity. Like one of them is horses, and so we have a Thunder Mountain Riders is our active horse club, and so some of the requirement for participating in that is to either own or be leasing a horse or have some kind of an agreement with a horse owner. So there's a lot of expense personally, in that topic that. But then also back to the cross-country skiing, that development team also, they work to pay for their travel and there is a fee associated with that. If anybody has any hardship financially to participate in any 4-H programs, whether it's our summer camps or club activities, we do our best to find scholarships and to not have that be a barrier. We can't buy you a horse, but we can do a lot to try and just make it accessible for all people.
One of the things that caught my eye was the luge sledding.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Oh, man, we're excited. This is our second year doing this. Doug Sandvik has stepped up. He's a local volunteer and wonderful person all around who has brought his joy of this sport called luge sledding to Juneau. And we have, I think it's a total of 12 sleds, and We're just getting registrations and activities going for this one, so I'll give you a phone number to call us in just a second here. But the activity luge sledding is kind of like your what you think of your Olympic luge, but a few steps down from that. We don't have a bobsled run here in Juneau, so the luge sledding is running on a groomed slope. Like last year, we used the Porcupine Run up at Eagle Crest, and that's actually a nice slope to be sitting on these sleds. They have two runners, and it takes a little bit of doing and a little bit of size. So you have to be at least 10 years old to participate in this. We encourage adults to participate too, just because we're trying to build some community around it. But these luge sleds are super fun. You sit on them and you lean back and you work these runners, and you can do slalom, you can do racing, you can really build up your activity there. It's a lot of fun.
I imagine there's a lot of vocal activity when you're screaming down the hill.
Yeah, depending on the conditions. Yeah. So. Yeah.
What's a teen outdoor adventure?
Well, we have an active camp each summer, and it's the Alaska Experience Camp, 4-H Outdoor Skills and Adventure, which we have teamed up with the Department of Fish and Game over the last few years to offer. And it's been that camp has been middle schoolers and high schoolers. And we've done it for about 5 years now, and those teens who have participated in that and other teens who are interested in the community to do more with their outdoor skills and adventures, we have a group of them and are inviting others to join. If there are any teens out there who want to just do more to get outside and to plan activities and to do them. And we've got a few things that are on the table right now. One of them is to plan and do the Cross Admiralty canoe route from Angoon area all the way across over towards Pat Creek. So that's a week-long adventure, and some of our teen youth have opted to start planning for that and to make that happen. It's all about youth-led and youth ideas, and our job as adults with 4-H is just to follow their lead and to provide them the guidance and the support to make what they want to have happen. So some of their other ideas have been to do an outdoor survival camp, which is a wintertime survival specifically, because we've done during our camp in the summer times, we've built shelters and, you know, learned how to make fires and stayed in the shelters and all that kind of really good survival skills during the summertime. And some of these kids are looking to up the game a little bit and do a wintertime survival camp. And again, we are relying on the youth and supportive adults to plan that and to move it forward. It's a lot of good fun.
I noticed you're also involved in shooting sports.
Yes. 4-H, since the 80s, have taken on shooting sports for a number of reasons. Up here in Alaska, I'm a very strong supporter of firearm safety, recognizing that we do have so many firearms in our community and in our homes and everywhere to provide an understanding by all youth of how to be safe around firearms. And then from that, also providing the opportunity to build on their excellence around whether it's archery or air rifles or 22s or for target purposes, and also for hunter training. And so we engage with that as well through our outdoor skills.
How old are the kids involved in the shooting sports?
We start at 8 years old and on up.
I noticed you have written down your gardening is one of the things you want to talk about, and I'm not thinking that gardening is happening right now.
Well, as gardeners would know, now's the time that we actually have some time to regroup and to kind of look at what we want to plan for next year. And there we have a very active Juneau Garden Club in the community, as you're probably well aware, and there are wonderful folks who are doing different activities throughout the winter. That's one thing I just want to encourage is that if you do have a gardening bent, if you're new to Juneau, or if you just want to kind of step into the gardening world, we have a great community of gardeners. So I would look up the Juneau Garden Club. Also, the Extension Service, Cooperative Extension, who is my employer, we are the home of the Master Gardener program. And so we provide the training for the Master Gardeners, and I also do my best to try and support the association, who organizes Master Gardener projects and volunteer service to the community. So if you're a Master Gardener, somebody who's been trained with Master Gardening in the past, we invite you to re-engage with the association. We have some wonderful people who are helping to organize the Master Gardener Association. It always takes these grassroots organizations always take some effort to pull things together, and the more people involved, the better, and the better quality projects we have. And so we're going to have a new session of Master Gardener training this spring, and so I just wanted to have people get that on your radar, and we're going to offer it February, March, and April of this coming spring, so we'll have those exact dates and times and registration available up soon. But in the meantime, you're welcome to call our office. I encourage you to call our office for any of these, more gardening information, as well as how to volunteer as a 4-H leader or to involve your children or youth in 4-H. We're always happy to partner and bring on more folks in the community. And our phone number is 523-3280. And you can click on my extension, which is extension 2. So 523-3280, and I'll be happy to help you out with any of these things.
And where's your building located these days?
Stone's throw from KTOO, right across the street from the museum project. So we're on Whittier. It's called the Public Safety Building, but for some reason people don't know what that building is, but we're right there on Whittier Street.
I was wondering who was throwing rocks the other day.
Exactly. They go back and forth.
Is there any time of year where you're not busy?
Oh, boy. That would be nice. No, this is a on type of work between the youth programming and the gardening seasons. And I also do work with the Food Policy Council statewide. And so we have a conference coming up, but I don't want to muddy the waters too much, but we have a conference coming up in February maybe I can tell you guys about in the future. But yeah, there's a lot going on all the time.
Dennis Snyder, thank you for coming down and talking about 4-H and all a bunch of other stuff you're working with.
Thank you, Jeff.
This is Bird Note. Recently, BirdNote looked into the eyes of a great gray owl as we talked about the superlative vision of owls. In a moment, we'll turn to the owl's equally remarkable hearing. The owl's large yellow eyes are set in a broad, gray-feathered, dish-shaped face. Ridges of tiny, hair-like feathers rim the owl's face, creating what are known as facial discs. Just below the margins of the facial discs, concealed by feathers, are the openings to the owl's ears. The concave facial disc acts as a sound collector, like a parabolic microphone or an old-fashioned ear trumpet. The disc guides sound to the owl's asymmetrically placed ears. One ear opening sits higher on the skull than the other. This enhances the owl's ability to pinpoint sounds in three-dimensional space. The great gray owl hears the faintest sounds of unseen rodents, whether under a foot of snow or in the dark, and glides in on its unsuspecting prey, talons outstretched. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, offering HydroFit every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 p.m. until 7:30, Aqua Aerobics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. until noon, and Stretch Aquatics Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Fall swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/pool. More information at 586-5325.
About 20 minutes before the hour, and you're tuned to KTO News in Juneau and KRNN FM in Juneau. You're in a June afternoon. Our next guest is Eric Boris from Trail Mix here to talk about the Saturday's dinner and auction.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jeff.
The trail on your microphone, you can hear.
Oh, you can hear me now? Thanks for having me.
Trail Mix, how long has Trail Mix been around?
Oh, let's see. We started in 93, I believe. So, you know, that makes us 22.
And how long have you been?
I've been the executive director for 5 years now, and then I was lead foreman for a year before that. So I've been with them for 6 years now. Longest job I've ever had.
I need to ask you this every time you come by, but how many trails are there in Juneau?
Roughly 100, if you add up all the little beach accesses. And I mean, there's a lot of little like hunter trails or just hiker trails that aren't officially maintained, but roughly around 100 officially maintained trails between what the Forest Service has, what state parks has, and what the city and borough have.
When you talk about maintaining trails, what does that include?
A lot of things. Anything from brushing them. We live in the rainforest, so things like to grow fast. So going through once a year and trying to knock back the Devil's Club and the blueberry bushes cutting trees off to fall across them, to major restorations, which bringing in gravel to harden up areas that are just mucky muskeg or old boardwalk that's fallen apart, repairing that. So all sorts of things. We go through trails fast. We're hard on trails in this environment.
I've been doing my share of hiking and trail walking, and I noticed the gravel, and I think somebody's got to move all that gravel. And I'm wondering, do you have helicopters?
Depends on how far away it is. We use a lot of power carriers if it's close.
What is a power carrier?
It's kind of like a wheelbarrow with a little gas engine in it, and can haul quite a bit, half a yard or so. You get out past, we did the math once, like 3/4 of a mile, and the turnaround time's too long, so then you end up using helicopters to get it in. But the nice thing about that, it's one big expense to begin with, and then it should be good for, long past all, but when we're all gone.
And these are some of the things you're raising money for.
Indeed, yep. So our auction is on Saturday. It's one of our major fundraisers, which I'm looking forward to. And we always get great community support. The focus this year is we've got a bunch of bridges, major bridges we're putting in on the Treadwell Ditch next year and a couple of years after. Because the Treadwell Ditch is my favorite trail in Juneau. I remember finding it when I first moved to town and what is this thing? This is crazy. It just goes along Douglas and it kept going. But it's kind of broken up in a lot of places because there'll be great trail. And then there'll be this big, there used to be a bridge there and there's a big washout and you got to climb down over all this old mining stuff and then back up again. And then you're back on good trail. So we're going to go through and we're going to try and put in some new bridges in some of those spots. So we've definitely got one going in over Paris Creek, which will connect the Mount Jumbo Trail. So if you go up the Mount Jumbo Trail and then turn onto the Treadwell Ditch, that'll connect you all the way to the Gaston Meadows Trail and then beyond, so it'll be uninterrupted from there. That's the only missing link right now. And then a few others north of there. Not sure which ones yet.
How many volunteers do you have?
We have a lot of different volunteer days during the summer. We probably had over 60 or 70 people show up for all told. We had some great groups come out. Had a group of Hawaiian high school kids that came out and helped us for a day. Siegel came out and helped for a day, and then we had a lot of just our regular ones where our members came out and moved a lot of gravel.
How do you determine what kind of trail you want to, whether it be a corduroy trail or a gravel trail?
It depends on how much money we get for it. That's the thing. Generally, if we're going to fix a trail, it's because there's a grant that I wrote. And we try and do gravel as much as we can because it will last longer. It takes more time and takes more money, but once it's in there, it should be good for a long time. It really depends on how much money we can raise and where the money's coming from. We work with the city a lot, and we get projects from them. And we work with the Forest Service through some different grant programs, work with state parks through some different grant programs. So, it's all a money game in the nonprofit world.
You mentioned your favorite trail earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What is the favorite trail of Junoites?
Oh, well.
Generally, would you say?
I hear a lot about the Treadwell Ditch. I hear a lot of people that like it, that go out there like it. I believe before my time at Trail Mix, we had some trail counters and put up around town, and the highest use trail was the Airport Dyke Trail, because it was easy and people could take their dogs there to walk. The highest use trail, it was not, downtown, or not, sorry, that, but was a kind of remote trail, was the Perseverance Trail. So I think that's between those three, and then, there's the the Kaxmulu Trail, the Brotherhood Bridge Trail, also a very popular one. So it's hard to tell exactly. Like, different groups have different needs and what they want to do. But, yeah, we've got something for everyone.
And you mentioned dogs. Mm-hmm. But how many dog bags do you go through in a year?
Do I go through? I don't go through any. I don't have a dog. So. It's generally the city that's putting out those dispensers. And I assume they put out hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of them. Yeah, there's lots. But it is a good reminder of people that there isn't a magic dog bag fairy that comes by and picks them up. So if you do fill a dog bag and leave it by the side of the trail, remember to pick it up on your way out, because otherwise it's just going to sit there for somebody else to deal with.
You're going to talk today about the dinner and auction you have coming up on Saturday from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m.
Oh, 9 p.m. 11. Oh.
Okay. I don't want to make you stay late.
I hope I'm done by then. So it should be done around, we should wrap up around 9.
What's on the menu?
Baranoff's Catering, and I don't remember exactly what's on there, but it all sounded great. I know that, and there'll be vegetarian options as well. But yeah, they did a good job the last couple of years, and I look forward to what they have this year.
And it's a dinner, so what time should people get there for dinner?
Doors open at 6. The dinner will, it's a buffet dinner. That'll start around 6:45. And then we'll have a silent auction going on through that. We've got a lot of great items. It's a very generous community we live in. We have lots of great things that people have donated, everything from snowshoes to helicopter tours to massages to, I can't even name them all. There's some wine baskets, a lot of great stuff. And then the live auction will start around 7:15, and we've got some good stuff in there, too. More tours. Got 2 tickets from Alaska Airlines. We have an UnCruise, one of the small, fancy cruise ship companies, donated a cruise. Some handmade wooden items, a lamp that a gentleman, a member of Trail Mix, made and donated that we're going to auction off. And, yeah, all sorts of great stuff. So I've got my eye on a few things that I'm going to try and bid on. If I have time.
How do people get tickets?
Tickets are available at the Jack, at Hearthside, at Rainy Day Retreat Books. And if you go to our website, www.junotrails.org, there's a link there you can buy them through. Or you can also find them through the Jack's website.
If people aren't able to beat a trail down at Centennial Hall this Saturday night, mm-hmm. is there a way they can contribute to...
Oh, certainly, yeah. Oh, we're always willing to take contributions. On our website, there's a place you can donate, and the best way is actually to become a member of Trail Mix. With the membership, you get discounts at several of the we have very, very generous sponsors: Foggy Mountain, Nugget Alaska Outfitters, and Cycle Alaska. All donate they get discounts for items if you become a member of Trail Mix. So it'll it's very worthwhile, and that way if you become a member, then you can be, when we have events going on, if you want to volunteer, if you want to help out with the trail or other things. So that's the best way. We also have a link on there if you just want to donate money.
And what's the phone number for people to call?
790-6406 is our office, or you can email us at info@junotrails.org, or just go to our website and all that's on there, junotrails.org.
And this is the time of year when you're spending your time writing grants rather than out there doing trails. Mm-hmm. But is there any trail maintenance going on this time of year?
We're working on trying to get there's a big landslide that went over the Montana Creek Trail, which is one of the few places that people could regularly cross-country ski last winter. But looking outside, I think we're going to have a lot of options now. But we're trying to make that, working with the Duna Nordic Club, to make that passable for the groomers so people can get over there. And then we've got a plan to totally remove the landslide next year.
Eric Boris, thank you for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so. Yeah, there's still plenty of tickets available if people are interested in coming to our auction this Saturday. And if anyone's interested in donating an item to our auction, we still have room for that as well. And again, just email, go to junotrails.org and send an email.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Jeff.
I love to go a-wandering along the mountain. And as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back. I love to wander by the stream that dances in the sun. So joyously it calls to me, come join my happy song. Valerie.
We most often hear bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
We began gathering data with this platform at the beginning of the school year. With the sensors on this platform, we have detected over 6 anomalies that could be precursors to an earthquake.
Those are Kodiak High School students Levi Purdy and Kyle Rusitanian talking about the work they do as part of a team of high school students working on a global earthquake forecasting system project. The project connects sensor platforms on Kodiak Island and around the world to allow for real-time data collection. Kodiak teenagers are involved in all of this because of a collaboration between the local school district, Trillium Learning, and a host of public, scientific, and professional partners. 16-year-old John Dunlop has the job of analyzing and interpreting the incoming data.
You just get real-life skills from this project also, along with, you know, what you learn from the science or the math or anything else.
This summer, the Kodiak kids were invited to present their research at the NASA World Wind Europa Challenge in Italy, an invitation-only competition for sustainability projects. They were the youngest presenters there, and they took home first place. Here's Anna McDonald.
2 years ago, I would have never thought that it would be possible for a group of high school students to do not only actual groundbreaking research that mattered, but then also take that research and compete with adults and university students and win. Now that I know that we were capable of doing that, I don't think there's ever going to be any kind of challenge that I'll be able to look at and think that I can't do.
The Global Earthquake Forecasting System continues to collect data that might someday be the key to early prediction. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Do you know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Listen to this story again at spiritofyouth.org.
And couple of notes here. The June 4th of July committee has announced the 2016 parade theme, patriotism. The grand marshals will be announced at a later date. Coming tomorrow in June afternoon, Brenda Weaver from Hearthside Books will be here with details about their annual author's event. We'll find out about Friday's Moose Canadian, the open mic in the Mendon Hall Public Library. We'll focus on this weekend's Wild and Scenic Film Festival. And Nancy DeCherney will be here with news about art in the capital city. That Writer's Almanac, Myrna News Gamora on June afternoon, Thursday.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also